I started by saying that when I first began my diet, it was very hard. I joined an email group because it's very hard to follow. You know, it's very hard when you start find a certain diet until you get used to what you can eat and what you can't eat. It's very hard to follow. So I began by saying that Rena and I, when we beginning of the year, we tried to decide to maybe look into adhering to Chadash. So then we got into a discussion of what is Chadash, something new, a new Chumrah? Mm. The answer is Chadash is not a new Chumrah whatsoever. It's the oldest Chumrah. In fact, I can't even characterize it as a Chumrah. Okay, how? But if Hashem will show you more, we're in Perek Chav Gimel Pasuk Tes in Vayikra. 682. Daber b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, v'amarta aleihem, and say to them, Ki tavo el ha'aretz, asher ani nosein lachem, when you come to the land that I will give you, ukitzartem es k'tzira, and you cut your harvest, you harvest your harvest. 682. The right bottom, last line. V'havetem es omer reshit k'tzirchem el ha'kohen. You should bring what's called the Korban HaOmer, the first cutting of your harvesting, to the Kohen. V'hainives HaOmer lifnei Hashem mitzonchem, and he waves the Omer before God to gain favor for you. Mimach haras hashabbos yinifenu hakohen. Very famous line in the Torah. The day after mimach haras hashabbos. What is Shabbos here referred to in the Torah? Does anybody know? What? Very good. Right. Very good, Drew. The mimach haras hashabbos is considered the day after the first day of Pesach. Right, the Chazal Darshana. It's the second day of Pesach that they bring the Korban HaOmer. They bring this waving offering. And you should make, when you wave this Omer, right, you bring a Keves Tamim, an unblemished lamb. By the way, you ever heard of Sirat HaOmer? Right, why is it called the counting of the Omer? It's because of this Korban Omer that is brought on the first, on the second day of Yom Tov. On the first day of the Chol HaMoed, the first day of the counting of the Omer. Okay, so even today, you all heard of Shiras HaOmer. Right, so this counting of the Omer is very significant. Why? And it's Mincha is Sneh Sonim Solas B'lulah B'Hashem and Yisharech Nichoach V'Nizko Rayim B'V'Yisahin. It also had a Korban Mincha that was brought with it. Very often, almost always, in the Beis HaMikdash, there was an animal that was offered, and a Korban Mincha, a grain offering that accompanied it. Here comes the fun part. The lechem, the kali, the charnel, lo sochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh. You shall not eat bread or roasted kernels or plum kernels until this very day. Ad haviyachem es korban elohechem. Until you bring the offering of your God. Chukas olam l'doroseichem b'chol mashvoseichem. An eternal chuk chok b'chol mashvoseichem for l'doroseichem. What is the halacha? Any grain that grew in the winter season, any new grain from this year, from a certain year, may not be eaten, may not be brought, may not be anywhere until the Korban Omer is offered on the second day of Pesach. That is the halacha of Chadash. And then the Gemara talks about everyone kept it. It wasn't like, you know, it was, you know, you harvested your grain. And normally for the Jewish people, though, it was relatively straightforward because they had a winter, and then the winter wheat didn't really grow. The winter wheat grew through the month of Adar, whatever, and then it dries out on the stalks. If you ever go to Israel, you'll notice when is the season for growing? Throughout the winter months. That's when it rains, and then it dries out, and they harvest it. So it's less of a problem. But for us, so then they would wait until the second day of Pesach, till the Or Korban Omer is brought, and then they could partake in their grain. It's explicit in the Torah, the halacha. That's a halacha called Chadash. Grain that's new, what? Oh, grain that's new, you've heard of this, you've all heard of this. You walk into Jerusalem Pizza, it says we own the Yasha. Right? So that means because new grain from wheat that was grown this year, is forbidden until, rabbis learned out, either they brought the Korban HaOmer, or if you can't bring the Korban HaOmer like nowadays, until the second day of Pesach. So what is Yashan? Yashan is grain that wasn't from this year. That's not from this year. Right? It's grain that was grown before last Pesach.
So this year's Chadash will be next year's Yashan.
Correct. This year's Chadash is next year's Yashan. Now, anybody here buy a Lender's Bagel?
Yeah.
Or Cheerios, or anything that we do. When is that grain from?
last week.
That is just kosher.
Right, exactly. Because the OU and the OK and the Star K and all of these places, they rely on a leniency, on a halachic leniency that says, especially an opinion that was posited by the Bach, the Bais Chadash, and I'm not very well versed on this, but there's a kula that says that especially in outside of Eretz Yisrael, and especially nowadays, it's a shlek seiko, we don't know whether the grain is yashan or not, whether it is chadash or not, and if we don't, outside of Eretz Yisrael, perhaps we don't apply the rule of chadash at all, but it's a kula. It's a leniency. I said.
Easier.
No, it doesn't mean easier. It means leniency. And the Jewish world relies on this. So I always say that when it comes to Chal of Israel, everybody's so makbid on Chal of Israel. But when it comes to Chadash, a lot of people that it's the new Chadash is not the new Chal of Israel.
We don't know.
What?
We don't know what Lenders bagels.
Oh, Lenders bagels nowadays are all pretty much all Chadash. No, they're not Yashar. They're all Chadash, basically. Yeah, and even if you go to Zeman's, you have to specifically ask them. They have, some people are careful. You have to ask them. What?
It's new. Their flour used to be Yashan.
It's not anymore. No. If you want Yashan, you have to pay for a warehouse to hold it for you. Yeah, and you have to specifically ask for it. So what they do, Mrs. Gittleman's children, the Applebaums in Toronto, they live in there yourself. They're very interesting.
She buys about 300 pounds of flour.
That's right. She told me that during the year, as soon as it comes out, they have like a warehouse in the garage, in the basement, they buy 300 pounds of flour. She said it's very interesting because on the campus, they all have this sort of gemach kind of. They, over the years, Pesach comes along. That's the trick. They don't want to have too much either. You can't buy too much. So they all sort of balance out. Do you have macaroni left? Do you have,
A
car full. What you mean before our Pesach?
Yeah.
Because they don't want to sell it either. Because they don't.
Very hard.
Right. Somehow everybody ends up with a lot of macaroni for Shalach Manos. Everybody's giving macaroni salad. What do you know? Yeah, observes it. In Lakewood. So in Lakewood and Toronto, it's in New York especially because there's a larger contingency of people. It's easier to some degree. But then there's a man in Brooklyn that publishes this booklet, this pamphlet, about where you could get chadash and what the products are. And it's, in order to know, right, you have to really go through the grocery store with literally a fine-tooth comb and know exactly what the product numbers are, and it changes from season to season. And some things they don't know and some things they don't know. So Cheerios could be good today and not be good next week. It's really, really hard. So when we first talked about it, I just said to Rena, we talked about it, she got the book, and she was like all into it. I said, I can't do it. It's too hard. No, it's hard enough walking to the grocery store to hear, like, you can't eat half the stuff anyway, you have to know what you can and what you can't. I can't go through and start thinking about what can't I, looking at the labels and trying to figure out the product. I can't do it. In November, Thanksgiving time, I go on this diet. And the way the diet works is no sugar whatsoever and no, what? No, carbohydrates I can have, but no refined flours also. Only whole wheat. So what I find myself doing, I'm going to the grocery store.
Looking at labels.
Exactly the same thing. Looking at every label, to decide what you can have. And it takes a long time on a diet to learn what can you have, what can't you have, what are you allowed, and I don't know if Rena said it to me or I said it to her. It's tremendous musa. Because it wasn't that I could do it or couldn't do it. Of course I could do it, because when it was something that was important to me, then all of a sudden, you do what you have to do in order to find what you need. Mm-hmm. Was it important enough or was it not important enough? And that's not to say we're jumping on the Chadash bandwagon tomorrow, but again, anytime you say I can or can't do it, so I find myself the exact thing, the precise thing that I told my wife I would not do and refuse to do, 4 weeks later, there I am doing it in Farmer Jack. Looking at every label, how much sugar is in, how much not. That was an education for me, by the way. It's an unbelievable education to read labels. But it's an amazing piece of musa. So you got me sidetracked, started on this. You asked me, how much did I lose? The answer is, I don't know.
But you don't.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. But the reason I don't know is... The reason I don't know is I refuse to get on the scale. Why? Because if you get on the scale, then you're so focused on the number. I was thinking about this today. So I got on that email group, Because sometimes, and it's all a bunch of ladies, and it's all a bunch of, I never respond, it's all a bunch of people discussing what can you eat, what they have. It's like a support group in a way for people on this diet, which is nice. But they're always like focused on, I'm 2 pounds less, I'm 2 pounds up, I'm down, I'm not. So it becomes such a focus, you become so concerned about where you're at. You know, where am I at today? I was 2 pounds less than yesterday. And you don't realize that what a diet is supposed to be about is learning how to live your life in a certain way.
And Weight Watchers is like that.
Weight Watchers, they weigh every week. I think I disagree with that.
Wow. That's your motive. That's
I disagree with that. I mean, for me, to be honest with you, where are you every day? If you have to ask, am I up, am I down, am I this, am I that? You know, a person can't go through life always reevaluating. Imagine every day, you know, always, you know, measuring. Do I measure up today? Do I measure up today? In a way, it becomes so compulsive that you lose the whole picture. So I'll get on the scale. When I go back to the doctor next year, I'll find out where I am. But to me,
once a year.
What more do you need? You know. You tell me you don't know? If a person, don't get me wrong, if you ate a gallon of ice cream, you shouldn't have done that. And you need a scale to tell you that? Now, we know.
You should all read labels.
So sometimes, what I'm saying is sometimes we become so focused on the number that the number becomes the end as opposed to the means to the end. Mm-hmm. It's a measurement. I was thinking about this vis-a-vis Pesach. Pesach is coming up. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times did you do Birkas Chametz?
Once.
One time. First of all, any good balabasto will tell you that I don't need to do Birkas Chametz. Right?
Mm-hmm.
She knows either it's clean or it's not clean, right? She'll tell you why. And how do I know that? Because in the Shulchan Aruch, right, we instituted that we put out bread, so there's going to be a bracha levatala, which means that every Jewish housewife knows that you're about to make a bracha levatala because I already cleaned there. And if she didn't clean there, she'll tell you I didn't clean there. You should check, or you don't have to check there. I mean, you know that. So then, why do you do the Bedikas Chametz? Because you need at least once before Pesach to make an inventory to do a check. So Han Chazal didn't say 3 weeks before I do a bedika, 2 weeks before I do a bedika, 1 week before I do a bedika.
The last minute.
Because the bedika should be a formality. Mm-hmm. The bedika already is supposed to be a formality. You know, you get on the scale, you know if you gained weight or you didn't gain weight. I don't know exactly where I'm at, to be honest with you, but I don't want the number to be a number.
Well, don't you know what you should weigh?
Well, that's also a subjective question, that I should weigh.
And
I know the doctor said he'd like me to weigh.
It's very important you feel well, your clothing fits well, and that's the most important thing.
Well, she started me. Yes. So that's exactly what I'm saying to you. When the diet becomes instead of a way of eating, right? What's the goal? A person should learn how to eat in such a way that's healthful for them. That's hard. But if you're constantly on dieting, so then all of a sudden I got to my weight, very good. Now I don't have to care anymore. Oh, back up! Oh, I gotta go back up there. Yeah. You know, this is the way America. This is the way America. Yeah, yeah. This is the way American society is. I didn't get started. Yeah. This is the way American society is. You know, up, down, and it's a very unhelpful thing. Very unhelpful. It's also, by the way, I think that that's the way Americans are religiously. Also, I'm bad. I go to church. I go to school. I'm good. Then I'm bad. I'm good. It's like we have these identities. And what Yiddishkeit is all about, what Frumkeit is all about, is to teach you there's no bad, good. Try to find a way that's even, that's level. You're trying to find the right derech, the path in life. And that, you know, oh, so I can have my tartarfus in the restaurant, but at home I don't.
Yes.
So that's crazy. It doesn't make any sense at all. It doesn't work that way. Oh, so you got me in some Megillah system. Very good. What?
She only ate one, didn't she?
She only ate?
When she became queen.
Yeah.
She only
comes
she ate was
what? Again, a midrash. Oh, great midrash.
I'm lucky.
Actually, you segued me into the Megillah. Because in reality, 52. In reality, page 1,252. Mrs. Unger. 1252.
Esther.
Esther.
The end of the book.
That is what the problem of Klal Yisrael.
Yes.
That is what Klal Yisrael believed. It's very interesting. I was speaking about this theme last week, and I'll clue you in to this week as well. The Megillah says something very interesting at the end of the Megillah. Okay? And it's based on a Gemara in Shabbos, and that I will hopefully find for you as well. Okay. Here we are. I'm sorry, turn to page 1261. I'm going to start at the end and then we'll go. There's a couple of midrashim that I have to share with you. 1261, we're at the very end. We never studied the end of Megillas Esther. Does anybody know why you never studied the end of Megillas Esther?
Why?
No, you never get there. Yeah, you always start at the beginning. You never get there. Who goes the whole thing? Our king, therefore. Our king, Chavvav. I'm sorry, Pasuk Chavvav, verse 26. Okay, therefore, Karu layamim ha'ele Purim. They're called the names of the days Purim. Al Shem Hapur, because of the lottery. Al Kain al Kol Divrei HaGerish HaZosh. Based on this, based on all the words of this letter. Umarou al Kacha. Umahigia alayhem. Right? And because of what they had experienced, and because of what happened to them, Chof Zayin. Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim aleihem v'al-Zaram v'al-Kol ha-Nilvim aleihem v'lo ya'avor. Therefore, the Jews confirmed and undertook upon themselves and their posterity and upon all who might join them to observe these 2 days. Yos osim esnei ha-yamim eile kichtavam v'chizmanam v'chol sana v'shana. Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. Everybody ever heard those words? Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. Here we are, my parak tes. Pasuk. Chav Zayin. I'm going to read you a Gemara. I'm sure it's going to be in here. Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. Perek Tes. Says the Gemara in Shabbos. Let's see if I can find it. Here we are. Shabbos Peches. What? Kimu v'kiblu. Kimu v'kiblu. Says the Gemara, Kimu v'kiblu. The rabbis see these words of Kimu v'kiblu. It wasn't that they just accepted Kimu v'kiblu, like it wasn't they just accepted Purim itself. The words Kimu v'kiblu are on the entire Torah.
That's what Nasev.
Very good, excellent. Nasev Nishma. Kimu v'kiblu is the same thing. Nasev Nishma. Right? The words there, the rabbis understand the words as being words that are deeper. Kimu v'kiblu. Says the Gemara in Shabbos, a very famous Gemara. The Torah says, "Vayishyatzvu b'tachti tahar," that when the Jewish people received the Torah, they stood at the bottom of the mountain. But what does "b'tachtit" mean? Mitachat, correct. Amar Rav Avdimi, very famous Gemara. Amar Rav Avdimi bar Chama bar Chasa. Melamed, it teaches us. Shekafa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem Eshar Kigigis. God took the mountain and picked it above them like a gigis. A gigis is a barrel. You know what a beer keg looks like? God took this mountain and raised it over them like a beer barrel. And an interesting imagery for Purim. Right? Like a barrel. V'amar lahem. And he said to them, Im atem mikablim haTorah mutav. If you accept the Torah, great. Ve'im lav, and if you don't accept the Torah, some take the rest of them.
What a choice.
Nasev Nishma! Okay. which is a very good point. I mean, but it's very interesting, if you read this Gemara literally, I mean, you know, it's not literal. Forget literal. God, I don't have to believe that God literally picked up the mountain and held it over their heads. What you have to believe is that the Jewish people, you're standing at Har Sinai, and God Himself reveals Himself to you in all your glory, and your soul literally leaves your body, and God says, no, do you want it? You can't. What are you going to say? There's no choice. Are you in or are you not in? There's no choice. It's coerced. It's obvious what the choice is. It's a rhetorical question. So he didn't have to literally lift it up like a barrel. But what the Midrash is trying to say is there wasn't a choice.
The good thing the rest of the world doesn't know that.
Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Says Rav Acha bar Yaakov. You don't have it. I'm reading you the Midrash. Mikan moda'a rabba le'oraisa. From this, there's a great complaint against the Torah. What is the great complaint against the Torah? Hey, come on, God. I mean, you know, between you and me, if I'm going to accept a covenant, a bris, you can't coerce me into that covenant. I have to have a choice. And it's not much of a covenant if you coerce me. Amar Rabba, the Gemara continues, Af al Peking, nonetheless, Hador kibluha b'yemei Achashverosh. They accepted the Torah in the time of Achashverosh, Dichsir, as it says, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. They fulfilled and they accepted. Listen how they read it. Exactly Mrs. Robert said. It should have said kiblu v'kimu. It says, Kimu ma-shekiblu kvar. They accepted, they fulfilled that which they had already accepted. Except, look at this. In our Megillah, it just says Kimu v'kiblu, you know. Comes along the Midrash, the Rabbanon, and the Gemara and say, you think it was only Purim they accepted? Baloney. They accepted Kol HaTorah Kula. They re-accepted the Torah. Except this time there was no coercion. They accepted it voluntarily. The war was over. They won. The Jewish people were saved. And a year later, it says, Kimu v'kivu, they got together and they said, we have to accept the Torah. Now I have to ask you the question. Why would the Jewish people need to re-accept the Torah during the time of Achashverosh?
They lost it.
What do you mean they lost it?
They've gone away from it.
Why?
Why did they?
Yes.
Because they had no leadership and no...
No. More than that. What was it that allowed them to think, what was it that made them think that they no longer, that the Torah no longer applied to them?
Oh, because they thought they were in control. They thought that they didn't need it anymore.
Why?
Because times were so good. They weren't bad environments. Assimilation.
We're getting there. We're getting closer. Anybody else? Correct. Correct. What happened? Can I have that sitter, please, Mrs. Unger? See the sitter?
Okay.
Any sitter. It doesn't matter. A Jew says Kriya Shema each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
Up until this point, the Jewish experience, for however long, they sinned, they didn't sin, they were suffering, they weren't suffering. The Jews only knew one thing as a nation. They knew that the Jewish people followed the Torah in the land of Israel as a Jewish nation. See, for us, it's a very different experience. To us, Judaism isn't a nationality. Judaism, first and foremost, is a religion. Right? What is that? What does it mean to be Jewish? You ask, I keep the Torah. But if you would ask a Jew during the times of Bayit Rishon, what does it mean to be a member of Bnei Yisrael? What would they first say? A man, they're very Israel, live in the land of Israel, and I keep Torah Israel. It all goes together. It's all intertwined. So a Jew recites Kriya Shema. And in the second chapter of Kriya Shema that God wants us to read each and every day, we say, if you keep my mitzvos, Asher anochi metzaveh eschem hayom, one second. Right. He says, Hishamu lachem, be careful. Pen yistel levavchem, maybe you'll become seduced. V'shartem v'avadetem Elohim acherim yistachavitem lachem, and you'll bow down. Then v'chara af Hashem b'chem, a guy's going to be mad at you. V'avadetem me'ar mehera me'al ha'aretz ha'tova asher b'Hashem lotem lachem. God's going to kick you out of his land. So now that in the Torah it specifically says, you still have to keep the mitzvot. You still have to keep the Torah. But it's very easy for our Jewish people who relatively recently, historically, they know themselves only as a nation of Jews. As soon as you get kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, what do you say to yourself?
I'm not a Jew anymore.
All bets are off, really. We have to create a new model for Judaism. We have to have JCCs and arbiter rings and retain our culture and our heritage and our Knedlach and our Beglach and our Yiddish, very important Yiddish, very important Yiddish theater, very important. But we're not in Eretz Yisrael anymore. We don't have relationship with the Kaddish Baruch. So what's the mitzvah? So then there's no problem, like we spoke last week, of going to a a party of Ahasuerus, even meaning what it means, like we spoke about last week, the understanding of that party. Because this is a new world, this is a new Jewish people. This is a new existence we have. It's a new generation. We hear it all the time. All the time. You know, if you ask any Jew today, most Jews today, they'll tell you, what does it mean to be a Jew? To them, Judaism means embracing the liberal values of America. That's what Judaism is all about. They all know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, you hear it in the what arguments are we talking about in today's day and age in America? What's the big argument? What's the big machlokes? Thank you, gay marriage. Right? So I've been called, you know, in the newspaper, I'm trying to keep track. I'm a bigot. Me. I'm a racist. Ellen DeGeneres called me immoral. I'm immoral. She didn't, not me personally. But, immoral, intolerant, prejudiced. I don't believe in equal rights. I feel like I'm an evil person to Elu. If you open the newspaper, all of us, we are like, you know, we're like Yetzer Hara, like the worst things that you could say about a person. And what do most Jews today, what do they think? If you would ask the Christian right, what does the Jewish community say about this issue?
It's okay.
What?
It's okay.
The liberal Jewish community thinks that it's okay. Right. Because they believe in equality, just like we fight for equality. Everybody should have equality. Mm-hmm. Right? So the Jewish people, they got to Persia. There's a new king, Ahasuerus. They're building new lives. They're spread throughout. No. It's good. Along comes Haman and Mordechai. And along comes and says, not good. And it reminds us that the Jewish people, no matter how hard we try to be as liberal, to out-liberal the liberals in New England, it sounds so, you know, preachery. As hard as we try as a people, we still are Am Yisrael. We're still Klal Yisrael. And if we don't remember ourselves, the Kodesh Baruch Hu will remind us. And so afterwards, after the whole thing was over, Mordechai got up and said, now what? You might not be in Eretz Yisrael, but you have to make a choice. What's it going to be? Do you think that there's one life in Eretz Yisrael, one kind of Jew outside Eretz Yisrael, that there's a national Jew and a religious Jew, and then there's a secular Jew outside of Eretz Yisrael? Or do you understand that, yes, we might be in the Gullus, but it still says, but after the galus, you still have to put on tefillin and you still have to put on mezuzahs. Why? L'man yiru yimeichem v'yimeichem. But there's a second half of the v'hayayim shamoa, and if you ever want to get back, you have to fulfill the Torah. And nobody's holding a barrel over their head, and nobody was holding a mountain over their head. And says the Megillah, kimu v'kiblu ha-yehudim. They came back and they said, you know what? You're right. If there's anything that Judaism teaches us, is that there isn't, you can't turn it on and off. It's constant. It's absolutely true. And just as it was true at Har Sinai when we felt coerced, now we're going to justify and say that it's true today. Not in Eretz Yisrael, where we can't see God explicitly, where there's hesed upon Him, where God is hidden and we have to find Him. That's when we find the Kodesh Baruch Hu the most. And that's what it means to be a Jew. So it's interesting. I would say, it's actually interesting, I would say that today we suffer from the opposite malady. That today's day and age we see ourselves too much as a religion and not enough as a nationality. Hmm. We don't think of ourselves as a Jewish people enough as a people. We only think of ourselves, we have a gullus mentality after 2,000 years. There's a gullus mentality. Without thinking that maybe, you know, the Jewish people now became sometimes for us to stand up for who we are, to represent ourselves, to defend our right to be who we're supposed to be. It's interesting. You know, we have the Kol HaTorah Mitzion here, and they're wonderful people. I think that, you know, I struggle a lot. I'm talking about this, I told people I'm going to talk about anti-Semitism this week in this movie. We'll talk about it. And so one of the things that I feel strongly about is this idea that anti-Semitism is here to remind us that perhaps we don't really belong here. And I mentioned this to a rabbi I respect very, very greatly. And his reaction was sort of cold to it. You know, there's anti-Semitism in Israel too, which is true. There's hatred of Jews all over the world, which is true. So I was talking to Nina about it, and she said, well, you don't have the influence of the Kolotarim. He doesn't might have the influence of the Kolotarim feeling like you do. You know, one of the things that they teach here, and we learn from them, but I think from having people in our midst that have a different, their worldview of Jews is just fundamentally different than ours. Because they're raised in a fundamentally different picture of what it means to be a Jew. I was raised that what it means to be a Jew is religious. Whereas they were raised, what it means to be a Jew is who you are. It's who, where you're born. It's a part of your personality. And I'm also a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. And that clearly is what the Torah is ideal in what a Jew is all about. It's not one or the other, it's both. And that's something I think that today, we very much lack, this Purim mentality. We have a Gullus mentality, and it's ingrained in us. I understand why. But it's not a correct mentality. It's not what the ideal is supposed to be. Okay, I got to read another address. Turn back to Perek Dalet, chapter 4.
Did you see that movie? Did you see the movie?
Yeah. Oh, you missed it on Sabbath.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not doing Chazara.
Yeah.
We're not going over that.
No.
No. Perek Dalet, chapter 4. You didn't miss anything. You didn't miss anything. So we know Haman and Ahasuerus make a deal. They come to an agreement. Ahasuerus sells out the Jewish people for the right price. Megillah says, "Umordechai yada is asher naasa," and Mordechai learned of all that had been done. Okay, again, can somebody tell me? Oh, I'm on page. I'm sorry, 1255. 1255, chapter 4, 1255. Okay. Again, now comes my art scroll critique. Okay. Mrs. Kleinplatz, how would you translate Mordechai yada et kol asher na'asa? Now, don't look at the English.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Mordechai knew everything that happened.
Okay, good. Mordechai knew everything that had been done. How does art scroll translate it? Mordechai learned all of that had been done. Okay, what is the implication? What's the difference between learned and knew?
Knew is probably a novelty or on his own.
Correct. Knew implies he knew all that had been done. He had foreknowledge. He was aware of what was going to happen. Let me show you the words of the Midrash. Mm-hmm. I mean, unbelievable. It's a long Midrash. I'm going to read a few and translate. It would help if I had it in front of you, but didn't have time to photocopy. Amar Rabbi Shmuel. Says Rabbi Ishmael, Shmona Asar Elef Echamesh Mios Halchu Leves Hamishte. 18,500 people, enough to fulfill the Joel Lewis Arena, right? 18,500 people went to that party. Achlu, they ate, they drank, v'nishtakru, they became drunk, v'nishkalkalu. Spoiled. They defiled themselves.
Defiled.
Yeah, they defiled themselves. They acted, they were inappropriate. Miad amad ha-satan v'hilsin aleyam lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The satan got up and tattled on them before God. V'amad lefanav and said to him, Ribbono shel Olam. So he said, Ribbono shel Olam. Ad matzai kidbak ba'um azuz v'hi mafrisim levavam be'emunasa mimcha. How long are you going to cling on to these people that dump on you, that reject you? They go to that man's party, 18,500 people, and you're still holding on to them. Im ritzoncha, if you want, abed umazu min ha'olam, destroy this nation from the world, ki einam bayim b'tshuva lefanecha, because they are never going to do tshuva. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says God, Torah Maktehe Aleha. What's going to happen to our Torah? Amar Lefanav, he says, Ribono Shel Olam, Tistapek Be'Elyonim. You've got a base medrash up here, plenty of people learning up here. What do you need down there for? Who needs it? It's enough. V'gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yishva Daito Limchos Es Yisrael. And God himself, it was a good argument, a very good argument, and God himself decided to destroy the Jewish people. Ouch. Ba'osha Shah, at that time, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Lama Li Uma, why do I need this nation? Shebishvila, here basi osho sai umo sai l'chola kamim aleihem l'ra'ah. What do I need to save them and make? I did miracles for them after miracle after miracle. Right, and still no good. Ashbisa me enos yezichram. I want to destroy them. Forget it. They're not going to do tshuva.
How many times?
It's a good question. How many times? Miad Allah HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Satan. Listen to the language, so powerful. So God said to the Satan, Havei li Megillah, bring me a Megillah, ve'echtov aleihem kaliyah, and I will write a decree for them to be destroyed. Ve'oshah shah, halach ha-satan behevi la Megillah ve'kasav aleha. Okay, at that time, Satan was very happy, brought him a parchment, and God wrote on the parchment, the Jewish people will be destroyed. That's a scary piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Miyad Yatsucha HaTorah BeBigdei Almanus. The Torah came wearing clothes of mourning, black clothes. The Torah put on sackcloth. V'nasna Kola BeBechi Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Torah began to cry. V'gamalech HaSharish Tzaku L'Kol V'chiyasa, and the angels upon high, they began crying out. V'amu L'fanav, and they said, Ribono Shel Olam, God, in Israel, but only in the olam, if there's no Jews, anu lama anu tzrichim ba'olam, who needs us? As it says, shenamar him erilam tzaku chutam malachei shalom mar yivkayim, that they han high, they began to cry. Kevan shesamu chama ulovan akach asmu nigham, shenamar al bishamayim kederes shak asim ksusam, the sun and the moon, they didn't want to shine anymore. They were so upset. The Oza Shah at that time, Rach Eliyahu Zachur Latov Bebehela Eshel Avos HaOlam Eitzel Moshe Ben Amram. So Eliyahu HaNavi heard what's going to happen. He goes running to the Avos, and he goes running to Moshe Rabbeinu in a behela, in a confusion. He's running to them. Va'amar Lahem, and he says, Ad Mashai Avos HaOlam Redumin B'Sheina. How long have you gotten asleep for? You heard what happened, and you're not going to say anything? Don't you care what's going to happen to your children? The sun is crying, and the moon is crying, and the angels are crying, and the heavens are crying. And you're just watching, you don't care. So they said, well, what do they do? Why does God want to destroy the people? My children. Because they took part in that meal. And because they participated in that meal, God decreed that they'll be destroyed. Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov said, In Haim Avru al Das HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if they violated God's commandment, the Nechtamak Zerasam, and their decree was sealed, Ma Ani Yechol Lasas. What can we do? Not a good picture the Midrash is painting. Right? Chazar Eliyahu Amalei the Moshe. So Eliyahu runs to Moshe. He went to Avram, and he said, Yaakov, couldn't do anything. He runs to Moshe and he says, Say, Moshe, how many times did you save the Jewish people? They were on the brink, you're like 10 times? And you pulled them back. Mata anel hatzara hazos kibo ban and ad master. So what do you say? What are we supposed to do? Amalei Moshe. So Moshe says, Klum yesh adam kasha ba'osah hador. Is there anyone in that generation? He said 18,500, right? Is there 18,501? Amalei yesh ushma Mordechai. There's one guy. And his name is Mordechai. Amalei lech vahodiyo kdei shaya mohu misham b'tvila v'ani nikad. We're only going to win if we fight on two fronts. You tell him, you got to fight down there, and I'll fight up here. He's going to find this thing. One second. Amalei ro'en ne'eman kfar nichtava igarash kliya al yisra. He said, yeah, but Moshe, God already wrote the letter. Amalei Moshe, im betitu chsuma, tefilasein in ishma. Did God write it in mud? Or in the dam nichtama, mashahayahu. He said, but was it written in blood? Amalei betitu chsuma. It's written in mud, in dirt. Amalei Moshe Rabbeinu, lech vahodiyah l'mordechai. So he says, run, go tell Mordechai right away. Miyad halach vahodiyah l'mordechai. So Eliyahu Hanavi ran and told Mordechai what was happening. Hu hadavar u'Mordechai yada es asher na'asasa. What does it mean in the Megillah? Mordechai knew what was going to happen. Eliyahu Hanavi told him. And says Eliyahu Hanavi, it's 18,500 to 1. It's all up to you. You are the last man. You down here, the others already gave up on you. And Moshe Rabbeinu upstairs. You can revoke the decree. What a midrash. What do you do with that? And that's what it means that Mordechai knew. He was aware. And when a gzera like that goes out, I learned from this two very important messages. Gzeras don't happen on their own. To say, where's God? Right? With the Jewish people, if something so significant is going to happen to the Jewish people, it has to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's happening, and God in some way allows it to happen. That the Gezeirah is already written. And the Megillah is trying to convey that as well. Mordechai knew, because he's aware of what's going on spiritually. And the second thing is, look at the power of one person. Right? Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov gave up, and Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it on his own. But if you have the ability to motivate people to behave in a certain way, what did Mordechai do? He did something very simple. He got the Klal Yisrael together.
Oh, that's simple. That's simple.
Well, when all Klal Yisrael is facing, you know, it's so interesting.
Wasn't
the children? Yeah, well, the children, we're talking about that too. But it's so interesting. The Jewish people, you know, sometimes, even when you face great calamity, you need somebody to rally around. You need somebody to unify you. You need somebody to pull you together. And Mordechai was able to do that, you know, even in the face of great danger. Because otherwise, I'm going to deal with it my way, you deal with it your way. So it's interesting, you know, as we'll soon see. Let's read a little more in the material and we'll see what the principle really was. Yeah, I have nine minutes. Yeah.
Unifying together.
For example,
it would be like 9/11,
saying,
you know,
all
the patriotic songs,
and
they unify us together.
I would say so. But it's, yeah, that was a very interesting and unique moment because it's already dissipated. You know, is a country a unified country anymore? We're so divisive now. You know, and it really dissolved so quickly. Yeah, it's true.
How is it though that Mordechai wasn't like everybody else?
The Midrash says that it's a very big machlokes of what kind of person Mordechai was. What was his real nature? Because interestingly enough, what did Mordechai do professionally? Right, for who? The Megillah says Mordechai yoshev b'shar hamelech. What does that mean? What a judge? Where?
For the melech, for the king.
For the king. What kind of member of Sanhedrin would be a judge in the Persian court? So here you have this juxtaposition of details that we know about him. The Midrash says he was a member of the Sanhedrin, but he also served in the king's court. I say he's not an Orthodox.
That is an
honor. What? Yeah, you have examples of that throughout history, and by now, you know, even today, you know, if not that he should hit us on the internet, but I wish if Senator Lieberman he has a certain kind of level of some type, he could have been, you know, a member of the Agudas Yisrael. That's our reason why. Because a member of the Agudas Yisrael can become elected as a senator and a leader in the halls of Congress. There's no reason why not. You know, he's a firm man, a Shaar HaTorah Mitzvos. It's a very impressive thing to do. And people, when they think of him, they might not like him for president, but he stands for uprightness and morality and the things that are good. What a Kiddush Hashem. Mm-hmm. But it takes a certain individual to walk in both worlds. And Mordechai was able to walk in both worlds, clearly. And that's a very hard thing to navigate, very hard. So how come he was the only one? I wish I knew, you know? If we all knew the secret to that, so it's interesting, Mordechai, and, you know, and it's Mordechai, he understands where he is in history. Skip down to 1256.
And giving up Esther.
He doesn't give her up.
Well,
he realizes it's time to reveal herself. So Mordechai says to Esther, you have to go to Ahasuerus, as we know. And what does Esther say?
I don't want to go.
I haven't been called yet. It's dangerous for me. Pasuk Yud Bet. I'm sorry, Yud Gimel. On page 1256. 1256. What? Yeah, catching up. Right, I'm skipping a lot of details. Vayomer Mordechai Lahashiv al Esther. Mordechai says to Esther, Esther, you are the only Jew in the world that can escape. You can hide. But he says, do not imagine that you will be able to escape in the king's palace more than the rest of us Jews. It's interesting. I don't know if that's it. It's a very interesting translation. Al tadami b'nafshech. I would not have translated it as you don't think that you'll be able to escape. I would have said, don't try to escape with your own life. I mean, don't place yourself ahead. Rather, if you're silent at this time, salvation will come from another place, meaning what? Mimakom, right? From the makom, hamakom, from God. You be lost, and your family also lost. Meaning, who's Beit Avich, your household?
He?
Yeah, me. I think it's coincidental, or do you see God's hand in your life? So you're right. Could you wait? Yes, it's interesting. We talked about this last year also. Esther's saying, I haven't been called. I'm going to be called in 3-4 days. So it's interesting. So what Mordechai is saying here is, are you going to be reactionary or proactive? Are you going to wait for things to happen to you, or are you going to make them happen? Because if you wait for things to happen to you, you will become a footnote in history. But if you make them happen, you can change the world. And that is a very interesting lesson for us. Very often, it's so easy to be reactive. Oh, it'll happen, somebody will take care of it, somebody else will do it. There are so few people in the world who are the ones that say, if I don't do it, it won't happen. Because why? You know why? Because every proactive act is a risk. A risk. Esther had to take the ultimate risk. But every act, every time you become active and you try to motivate others, you're putting yourself out there in front of everybody else. You know, and you become a target. Very hard to be proactive. It's very hard. Yeah.
Let me finish, please.
They ate, now they'll fast. The true Allah, they should fast on me. Okay. You're right. I could wait, but I'm not going to take the risk. I'm going to take the risk. But if I do it, I'm only going to do it as a representative of everyone. And maybe then, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu will find favor in his eyes to find mercy for us. See, it's a very interesting, such an interesting juxtaposition. Because on the one hand, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, Moshe Rabbeinu is a midrash. Moshe Rabbeinu davening upstairs, you daven downstairs, and together it'll work. But that's not enough. You also have to do one other thing. What do you have to do? Yeah, you got to make your shtabbos. You got to do something. And very often, in the Jewish community, I think, we're all for the tefillah. We're all for the davening. We're going to learn a little more. We're going to say a little tehillim. We're going to, you know, be more careful about lashon hara. We're all for that. But somehow we think that we don't have to make our hishtabas. There's nobody running forward and saying, okay, now what are we going to do about it to make sure that our tefillahs are answered and that we're successful? Because it doesn't happen on its own. And I think that's also another an important message of Purim. Purim happened because of two things. One, because of God's hand, but also because we made it happen. Right? Purim is a story of Jews doing things to save Jews. What happened on Purim? Why did we survive on Purim? Very simple reason. Why did we survive?
We were unified.
No, not just. That's right. They all got together. La'amod al nafshon. What was the decree annulling the Purim decree? You know what Achaveira sent out? This was Mordechai's chat. He didn't. You couldn't annul the previous decree. He gave them permission to fight for themselves. And sometimes I think a Kaddish Baruch Hu gives us the same. Don't expect it to happen for you. I'm not going to back out of what happened. Are you going to fight for yourselves? Or are you going to wait for me to do it for you? If all the Jews, nobody picked up a gun or a stick or an axe or a sword, and they all said, a Kaddish Baruch Hu will save me on Purim. Why? Because Rebbe Vat Shalom Yamon Mayud and Yimakum Acher. No. Right? It's interesting. You could read it the same way. I just thought of a good word. Al tadami benafshech lihimalei beis hamelech mikol hayuhudim. Don't think that you can escape to beis hamelech. Where's beis hamelech?
Judgment.
Well, beis hamelech. Ah, I'm going to shul. You know, that's all that I have to do. Because ki macharis tacharis, you're silent. Ravach v'hatala ya'amod la'yehudim yimakom acher. They'll get saved somewhere else. So does it take only that? Chas v'shalom. It takes both. It takes Moshe Rabbeinu on top, Mordechai convening all the people together at tefillahs at the same time, but then you got to do something about it. Because if all we do is daven in the Jewish community, if all we think to solve our problems, the anti-Semitism today, you know, we have this sort of gaius, we have this, you know, this gullus mentality again. Yeah, Shash still, be quiet, don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think it'll get better? Never got better. So, don't think that it'll only happen by the ADL. Right? That's not enough either. You have to have both. When we do what we're supposed to do, Mugleta Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we fight, then you have Kimu Vakibu, then you have a Purim, then you have salvation. All right, something to think about, you know.
Yeah,
a lot to think about, of course.